But again, you know, I think that part of the problem that we have in the church is that we are not focused enough on mission. On mission. Now, I want to stand up for a minute. Tell everybody your name.
I'm Yvonne.
Does Yvonne not look like a friend of one of... He looks like one of those 19th century Russian poets, doesn't he? I mean, look at this. Even his hair. This is a poet. Now, but he's not Orthodox. But he looks Orthodox, and he's got an Orthodox name. And he's got a buddy who's a choir director at the parish in Berkeley. So he's going to be Orthodox. Right?
Yes.
So, I want an adequate number, don't overwhelm him, but an adequate number of you, after we have our break, or when we're having our break, find a moment to come up and give him a big hug into Orthodox.
Father, when you were saying about racism, my children are biracial.
Uh-huh.
They're born Orthodox. But when we lived in Boston, we lived like 2 blocks from creating an Orthodox church. I remember going up and going, oh good, we've got a backup parish to going to the one over in Cambridge. And the people met me in front and they were saying, you want to go to the Ukrainian Roman Catholic Church over there? I go, no, we're Orthodox. No, you want to go over there, aren't you Roman Catholic? I go, no, we're Orthodox. I went to Holy Cross, met my significant other. We're a happy Orthodox family. And then we went there a couple of times and then we were thrown out, basically, because I have a child with disabilities. Aww. And they were making too much noise for people who wanted to pray during liturgy, and I was trying my best to keep them quiet. Actually, these nice nuns here have met my child, and, you know, wonderful, and the parish that I go to, thank God, it's got a little color in it, so we don't look like we're just it. But
you know, as a Norwegian,
I'm with my 17-year-old because he's going, I don't want to go to church. He's having like racism is like a big. We live in a basically semi-white community. I'm in it outside of Sacramento because it's a good high school and such. But it's something I face, but I don't have to face when I'm not by myself. That's but when I have my children, I'm the head of an African American family, and you know. It's a struggle. I mean, they have the basic faith, but it's a struggle a lot, and it's real. I mean, people think, I know, it's not that we don't understand it, but it's hard, you know, being a person, you know, Natalie here is a person of color, too, and, you know, it's not easy.
Do you know how difficult it is being an old Norwegian?
Yes.
In this new age where more and more people are people of color.
Yeah.
I was sitting in a restaurant in Seattle with a doctor friend who's from Norway, and he's my age. So we look like brothers. And at one point I said, have you noticed that all the waiters here are people of color? And I said, and look around. I said, probably over half the people in this restaurant right now have color on their faces. I said, look at us. We look like we're just stepped out of a tomb. You know, you don't get whiter than being a 72-year-old white Norwegian with a white beard. You know? You know what happens when I'm in downtown Seattle on a summer day? People put on their sunglasses when they see me come.
I know, I have the same skin tone.
But here's the thing. When I was growing up in Spokane, my uncle, my mother's older brother, who was an Air Force colonel, and his wife had a crumbling relationship. And finally, my aunt and uncle divorced. And my aunt was my favorite of all the relatives. She was my favorite. I loved her. And in court, my mother told me this. In court, my uncle is, they're both fighting for custody of the three children. And my uncle told the judge in court that his ex-wife was unworthy of having these kids because she was dating a black man. Now, this is the 50s in Spokane. And she countered, "Arthur is a cross-dresser." Oh, family ties.
Oh, boy.
And so the judge gave custody to my grandmother. Neither of them were going to get these kids, as far as he was concerned. A cross-dresser or a woman with a black man. You know. But my mom and dad sat us down. That's when I heard this story. And my mother and dad said, you know, every marriage that comes to an end, it isn't based on one person. It takes two to have a divorce.
Yes.
And we're not taking sides. So we love your uncle, we love your aunt. And in our relationship, we're going to stay with both of them. So my mother's mother and her side of the family absolutely divorced Aunt Billy. Not going to have anything to do with her because she's going with this black man. But our family, we were the only ones that stayed with both. And Wally, they married. And Wally was a famous photographer in Spokane at the time. And Wally turned out to be my favorite uncle. He was a kind, sweet, generous man. And whenever I was in Spokane from college on, I always made a point to stop and see Aunt Billy and Uncle Wally. I still love my uncle, Uncle Arthur, you know, the cross-dresser. It's always been one. I've always wondered now, did he wear maybe the uniform from here up and then the skirt down below? Probably not. But the point is, I had a thing. I was in a restaurant on Vashon Island, and I was coming out of the restaurant with a friend, and two young men came in. And one of them, they were both black, and one of them had big dreadlocks. I love dreadlocks.
That's my oldest.
And so they didn't see us as we were going out, but I stopped, and I touched this man on the shoulder, and I said, "I just got to tell you, I love your dreadlocks." And he said, "I love your beard." And then he hugged me. And as we went outside, my friend said, "Oh, you know him?" And I said, "No, I have no idea who he is. I've never seen him in my life." One day, the day that I was walking to the Armenian Holocaust Memorial, after I parked my car on the way there, there were three young black men in their 20s heading my direction, and they were all wearing hoodies. And my first thought in my mind was, we know what our society says about young black men in hoodies and old white guys, that we're supposed to be afraid of them and expect the worst. And so as we're coming towards each other, I said, "Isn't this a beautiful day?" And they were so caught off guard. And one of them says, trying to ask politely, "What are you?" And I said, "Are you asking if I'm a Seahawks fan?" The answer is yes. And they broke them up, and I got hugs from both of them, all three of them, right there on the street. And you know, that's what our life is about. You know, and we got to love one another. And part of loving one another is reaching out. And you know, I know that my threads, if you will, are off-putting to some people. And there's reason for it. You know, I've seen priests over the years that when they're out and about, they're looking through you. or around you or over you. And I think, in all honesty, I think some of that is maybe they don't feel very good about themselves. Maybe they have a little inferiority complex or something, or they feel people are judging them or looking at askance at them because they're dressed weird and they're priests and all that. And certainly we live in an age where Christianity has been discredited in a lot of people's minds because of the scandals of the pederast scandals in the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that out there. You know, I know lots of Roman Catholics that stopped going to church because of that. They don't trust their church anymore. And they have a good reason not to, for that reason. But the whole point is, that's not an excuse for me to let those people judge orthodoxy or judge religion. And when you're in a city like Seattle, where Roman Catholic priests do not wear collars anymore, ever, you never see them. And I had one priest friend. He's one of my oldest friends. He's in eastern Montana, and he's a doctorate from the Pontifical Biblical Institute in Rome, and he speaks 16 languages.
Wow.
Brilliant man.
Wow.
Italian, and very kind. And we've been friends for years. And so he came to the monastery to spend a few days, and we went into Seattle, and we were at the Pike Market. And here, as we were walking in the Pike Market, this homeless man came up to me, and he said, "May I have your blessing, Father?" Mm. And so I blessed him. He was an Aleut from Alaska. Mm. So I blessed him. He kissed my hand, and he said, "I really need your prayers. I'm having a difficult time." So I took my cross, and I blessed him. And I put the cross on his forehead, and I said, "May God help you in every way." And then as we walked away, Father Joe said, "Wow, he never would have come up to me, because I'm not wearing a collar. You know, I'm wearing secular clothes." And for this image of we Orthodox priests, whether they were monks or priests in parishes, we are supposed to always be on duty. Always. And now when I first was becoming a chaplain, I worried about this. Like, what are the officers are going to think about it? You know, when I'm not dressed like the other chaplains. Because most chaplains wear uniforms. Police or fire uniforms. And so what are they going to think about this? And then one day I was called off island after a sheriff's deputy had been shot and killed. And they needed more chaplains for this community where he was shot. And so I got there on the last boat. I was there around 2 in the morning. I stayed until 8 in the morning. And it was my first time being thrust into a situation like that 15 or 16 years ago. And so as I'm standing there and I'm feeling awkward because of my attire, I've got all these other chaplains in their police uniforms. And in fire department, you don't have this. You're automatically a part of the fraternity of firefighters. But with police, there's what's called the blue wall. And you've got to prove yourself first. So just because you are a police chaplain doesn't mean diddly to them. You got to prove who you are. And sometimes it takes years. So here it's within months that I've been made a chaplain. And I'm standing there feeling awkward and talking to one of the King County Sheriff's chaplains. And all of a sudden, this big burly guy in a suit comes out of the crowd and he says, "Father Trifon, I heard that you became a chaplain." And he comes over and he gives me a bear hug. And then he walks into the precinct. And I didn't know who he was. And I just started to say to Tim, "I don't know who that guy was." And he says, Did you see what just happened? Because at that moment, in 2 or so in the morning, there are people from all the departments around the region. There's police officers that have come to show their respects. And so he says, these are people who are, they just witnessed the most well-known cop in the region. He's a detective from the Burien precinct. And he just gave you a bear hug. The wall came down. And he said, how did you meet him? I said, he's from Burien. Oh, I know who he is, I said. When we had a neighbor attack me and knock me to the ground and break the three-barred cross that we had at the entrance to our property, that's another story, but when that happened, the officers that investigated this decided it was a hate crime and it had to go to the state, and so I had to go to Burien to be interviewed by a detective.